to the Hall of Fame podcast. As always, I'm going to give you a quick industry update. And remember, articles at onetruck.us. So we've put out some great articles in the past 2 weeks talking on what's going on with the economy, a lot of maritime issues, and even some things about autonomous trucks. So please log on to our webpage and check those out, because they come out a lot more frequently than the podcast itself. Now, let's get to the industry updates. There's some updates that came out recently. Ocean freight is looking to grow about 3.6%, but not just this year. That's over 2024 all the way to 2028. Truckload market has tightened a little. I'm not saying it's a lot. Remember, there was a lot of volume in January, but we think that was replenishment and things of that nature. And in February, it slowed down. So let's see, and we'll keep watching that truckload market and see how it goes as the March comes to an end, so you can kind of recap that first quarter. So sometimes we're about the tariffs. The tariffs is wreaking havoc in the supply chain. Why? So what you're having is, you know, normally there are tariffs, a lot of tariffs in China, some in Europe, so forth. So people are moving, manufacturing, people are pre-ordering, trying to get their freight here prior to the tariffs hitting in order to save that, but it's 25%, 50%, it's theirs. And there's some articles around tariff and even oil. That's also on the onetruck.us webpage that you can read and keep up with this. And just to give you an example about that, just remember, we put out about 3 to 4 articles a day, and it's some of it is information that just landed. Like the FMCA has appointed a new person to run it, and it's a guy out of the Florida administration. But that's also very interesting. So labor challenges is also something that is affecting trucking as a whole. But overall, I think the market has not recovered, and I don't expect to see a strong recovery. Remember, I still stand behind a 2% growth this year versus last year, and I still like that number and will continue. So with that said, welcome to our new episode of The Hall of Fame. Hello, it's Ken Miller at The Hall of Fame. We have Richie on again, and this time we're just going to talk about trucking and driver stories. This is nothing serious. We're just going to I don't know someone that has done more or spent more time in our industry other than Rich. And I think he has so much wealth of knowledge to share, especially when this goes out to, I know there's some people that are new into the industry that have watched these podcasts. He can give an idea just how the industry have changed, how drivers have changed, funny stories, nothing serious. And that's really where we are. So let's kick it off. Richard, introduce yourself again so we know who you are and go from there.
Richard Corbari, known as Uncle Richie in the industry. And I've been in the industry many years. I first started out with a leasing background, and then I got hired by a truck line. They only had 8 trucks, and 5 of them were a rock painter. And he controlled.
When was this? How long are we talking about? Can you give us like a time frame so you can get it? Like what years are we talking about here when you start?
It was about early 80s.
Okay. About early 80s. Right before the deregulation. Okay.
Right. Yep. I came in when deregulation started. Okay.
Perfect. Just started, yeah. It started in 80, 83, somewhere around.
Right, because we had everything, you know, the rates were established and everything else.
Yes.
So with the background I had in the leasing, I really fell into deregulation. It was a little easier with me because I can negotiate with people. You know, that was my forte. And actually, it was funny. You know, depending on how far you ran, whether you needed, I mean, it was mostly a lot of cab overs, but then they start coming out with conventionals. And and then I was younger and guys would say, hey, boy, I want one of those noses. They call them nose. <You know? laughs> I want those nose. I said, yeah. But you're going to have to run a little further or whatever. Well, just for the truck itself, these guys would want to, even though it was against what they wanted to do, they would run because they liked the way the nose, the conventionals look.
They love the ride. Yeah, I'll take a little bit there. It's funny. I started in 1999, and when I started, Jimmy still had cab overs, but they were switching to conventional. I'm here to tell you, every time you got a conventional in, people were fighting for it. It's like, it was, and at first I'm like, man, I don't understand what the difference is. And the driver says, listen, come here, military guy, let's get in the truck. So he rode on a bumpy road in a cab over. Then he put me in a conventional, rode a bumpy road. You see the difference? The tires are over your seat, so you absorb so much of the bump versus the tires in front of you in a nose truck conventional that it doesn't feel as bad. So that was my experience with it. But I'll let you continue on your story.
No, exactly, Ken. And the same thing in the 80s. These guys would fight over it. You know, they would threaten to leave their job, you know, give up their job because, hey, it looked so well. It was attractive. It was, you know, it was like it gave them some added class, you know.
Yeah.
And that was the big thing back then. Plus, like Ken mentioned, you know, the ride itself was a lot better, you know, and people really enjoyed it. But it was a status symbol with a lot of drivers. I mean, they would tell other people, you know, they'd make sure their people. I said, hey, don't be going by your house all the time or whatever. You know what I'm saying? I need you to be out there on the road. But they were out showing their relatives and everybody else their new conventional.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was around, and you know, as they got into them, it was something. You know, I had about 100 Kenworths at one time, you know, because that was the thing with, you know, a few drivers catch on, they like a certain truck, and then they tell you, you know, and then hey, you get them what they want, or, you know, in our case, they threaten you. You know, I'm going to go someplace else, you know, hey, because Billy Joe got this one.
This truck mattered. Kenworth was a big, Kenworth, Peterbilt were some trucks highly requested by drivers. Right.
Exactly.
Huge request, and drivers would ask for them constantly. It was a huge, huge, huge sticking point. But you're right. We would use our conventionals, the nose trucks, for our people not in trucking. We would use it as incentive for them to take more freight. And it worked for a very long time until all the cab overs were gone. Now, it's funny, though, when I go to Europe, they still use cab overs. And I have heard, I don't know this for a fact, that those cab overs ride the same as a conventional truck. So is that true? Have you rode in a cab over or seen one lately here in the U.S.?
No, I have not. Mm-hmm. Right. I have, but I would say, you know, let's face it, you know, with things today, you know, everybody has changed, you know.
Yeah. Technology has really driven that a ton. You know, something that we changed, and I think it's just interesting. I remember when we were converting in some roads for division, some of our drivers from hourly piece rate, and we even told them that if you ran the same loads that you're running now, you will get about a 8% increase. Okay, but the people that did not work would have a decrease. And I remember at first the drivers hated it. I can tell you, after the first year of it, the drivers, the good drivers, loved it because they went from making, they got about a 35 a 40% increase. Now, the bad drivers got about 10, 15% decrease. So it realized, and they loved the idea. They're like, well, this is capitalism. We had drivers that were originally making 60 grand on hourly, 60, 65, that were making close to 100 when we changed that, because they were hard workers and they were doing no more work than they were before. They were just being paid by the amount of loads they turned, and they were turning a lot of loads in an hour versus the people that weren't. So I remember that being a huge sticking point and change in the industry that caused a lot of hoopla. And at the end, the majority of the drivers end up liking it better just because they were compensated more. Now, I believe long-term, the best solution for drivers is a blend of both, a piece rate and then an hourly for it. If you get stuck at like a grocery receiver where you have to sit for 5 hours, that you're not just getting killed on those, on something of that nature. So I don't know how you feel about that.
I totally agree with you, Ken, because again, these people have families to feed. They have to be compensated properly. Yes. And some of these grocery houses, you know, and that's why standard is more or less 2 hours free. And then, you know, it's so much an hour because, you know, again, you have to make sure the man is compensated, because if not, just the retraining to teach somebody and go through all the pains, I think it's over $6,000 today, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, what you got to figure, you know, if he's trained properly, there's a lot of mistakes. And who does it cost? It costs the company.
Yeah. Yeah. I have told people that, listen, people say, okay, well, what does it cost to hire a driver? And I tell people it's way more than you think. It's even way more than six. And I break it down. I say, okay, how did you get the driver? Did you pay a bonus? Did you advertise? Okay, let's consider that per driver you hire. Then right. You put some type of orientation, okay, which takes a week, which you're paying in. But sure. Remember, you're also not running that truck, so you lose the revenue.
Exactly.
You send him out with a driver. You're paying him. Right. The other driver's driving. Oh, the truck you're supposed to fill is still not working. That's 2 weeks of not working. And then he gets out on his own. His productivity is not as good as the driver that left 3 weeks ago. So now you're getting 80% from that truck than you were getting before. So when you add it all up, it's $10,000-$15,000.
You're exactly right, Ken. It's costly. A bad driver costs you. You know, a driver that's not prepared is very costly. All this, you know, affects the company. So why not do it in the right fashion in the beginning?
Yeah, it's about being fair, being honest, being transparent, and actually paying them a fair wage where they can go home and take care of their family and feel like they're part of the team.
And that's why you have to talk to your customers. You have to talk to them. You have to build that trust and that relationship. And you got to be able to tell them, hey, would you work for nothing? You know, I got to pay the. You know, I mean, let's face it. You like the service we provide. You like that we're there on time. You like this. So, hey.
You know, what I've noticed with the customers is this. And in my now 22 years doing this is when the market is tight and they can't find trucks, they want to do everything. I said, hey, how come you don't have a bathroom for our drivers? No problem. Here's one. Hey, leave the truck? Sure, let him leave the truck. The moment the market gets tight, oh, we don't care. Someone else, you know what I mean? So it just ebbs and flows with the customer based on their needs.
Yeah, well, we're fortunate too. We have some customers for the last 35 years, you know.
And they're partners. Yeah.
But you know, you got to train them. I mean, you can't just treat them that, I'm going to gouge you, or you're going to, you know, you got to explain situations. You just don't jam stuff down people's throats, you know.
Yeah. But, you know, it's funny. I remember, you know, when people talk about drivers and smart drivers, I remembered over my tenure that I had two accounts that I had that were dedicated accounts that had managers that I promoted drivers into doing them. And those drivers ended up being very successful. And they were great drivers, but one of them had a degree. And I promoted him after I left in Albany, and he ended up being a great manager. Then I had one in Cleveland who I promoted into it, who loved it, but then says, you know what, I miss driving, and he went back to driving. Probably the best driver I have ever had, his name was Darren Walden. I'd say hands down, with the thousands of drivers that worked for me, probably one of the most solid drivers I've ever had. So there are some extremely smart drivers. And when I covered the last one, I had a driver that came to work for me in Chicago, and he was, I think, 34. And this guy had worked in corporate America. He has a master's degree, very smart kid. And I said, why are you here? He says, Ken, I make about 80 to 90 grand a year with you. When I leave here, I can turn my phone off. I'm not getting calls like you corporate people do. I'm not getting emails I got to answer. I go home and I coach my daughter's softball team. And I do whatever I want on the weekends. No one is bothering me. He says, that corporate America, I would get calls at midnight. I would get emails and this. And so for me, it's not worth it. Give me my 90 grand. Give me my family. And you keep all that crap. And he truly, that's why he did it. And I applauded him. You know, his time with his family meant more to him than working at a corporate job, making an extra $10,000-$20,000.
I had an ex-military man. He was an Army man. We used to call him the Sarge. And he made sure, I mean, he would press his clothes all the time. He was, you would think he was still in the military. But with discipline, he helped out tremendously because he'd see other people out of line or whatever. He would say something. Because eventually it affects everybody, you know, a bad performance affects everybody. So the Sarge was very helpful.
It's pride. You know, at the end of the
pride,
day,
right.
They go out for dirt trucking or whichever truck company you're referring to. And they go to a receiver that Sarge is going to, and they look like crap. It's a reflection on Sarge. He's like, wait a minute.
Exactly.
You don't go in there and look like that. That's my customer. I go there almost every day. You're there once in a while, and they get a bad impression for our company because you look awfully sloppy right now. Did you just roll out of bed? So I think it's pride, and I think you get that a lot from veterans. It's just pride when you put on a uniform, whatever uniform that is, whether it's your, whatever he wears for your trucking company, whatever he wore in the military, he takes pride in looking a certain way.
Well, just like I felt like, and everybody at the time felt, there's a difference between Strategic Air Command because we're the ones that have the bombers in the sky. We had a different performance level than the regular Air Force did. That's why we had a chief standards, physical standards every month. You know, we'd have to do so many sit-ups, so many push-ups, so many such and such. I mean, it was a lot more rigorous. You know, and
you guys have a higher clearance. Right. You guys had a higher clearance. Anyone deals with anything involves in bombing and nukes has a top secret clearance. And obviously you're going to get a better individual, a better vetted individual. You're probably going to get a better individual like yourself. Thank you for taking the time. That's all I really needed. When these episodes come out, we will message you before. And we will put all the information down below. Thank you for taking the time, sir. This is great. You want to say anything in closing?
No, anything for you, Ken. You're a very special individual. You know, you got a tremendous background, and just being affiliated with you in some way is a great honor. And I'm telling you from the bottom of my heart, you're special.
Thank you, sir. That means a lot. Have a great day, sir.